Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Greg Norton of Ultrabomb. Ultrabomb's new album, The Bridges That We Burn, is out May 1st and has already earned considerable critical acclaim. The high-energy release fuses audacious classic American punk rock with power pop proclivities and is guaranteed to connect with listeners looking to navigate the trials, tribulations, and absurdities of the present moment and beyond. Norton recently spoke about the lyrical inspirations for the LP, how the energy heard on the new recording translates to the live stage, and how punk rock has offered him a sense of community for most of his life. That's Greg Norton of Ultrabomb on Into Music, coming up now. Before we get started, I just want to say I hope that you and all your people are safe up there.
It's surreal, you know. It literally is an occupation, but you know, Minnesotans are resilient and vigilant, and we look out for each other. And you know, just the way everybody has come together has been great. We're not going to give up.
Well, to talk about happier things.
Yeah. You know, it's weird. It feels weird to be promoting something while all this is going on, but it also makes us realize, you know, the importance of music and art in trying times like this. And music in particular, I think what Ultrabomb has with this new record is kind of the soundtrack for the resistance for this year, you know?
Yeah, I was wondering about that, listening to it, where it's like, obviously you wouldn't know that, you know, what was to come, but maybe something in the air that kind of gathered in the songs in some way and had this resonance.
Most of the lyrics for this record I wrote last summer, you know, leading up to going into the studio at the end of October, beginning of November. So, you know, definitely a lot of it was inspired by, you know, what was already occurring with the administration and the way the media covers protests and things like that. So, you know, I would have liked to have it been not relevant, but it is, you know.
Is this really pretty much like the first band that you've really written lyrics for?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I wrote, you know, in the early Husker days, and, you know, is Bob and Grant got better at their song craft, and their internal battle between the two of them as being top dog took over. I kind of got pushed out of the writing thing, you know, not necessarily pushed out, but it was just a lot more difficult to bring something to the table and have them, you know, take it seriously or with Ultrabomb. I've written, with the exception of West in the Summertime off our last record, Jamie Oliver wrote those lyrics, but I've written all the lyrics for Ultrabomb. And, you know, the first couple of records were more, you know, interpersonal relationship related things. And with this one, you know, it just so happens, I think, that a lot of the songs really line up with the times and what's happening around us right now, you know, commentary on where we're at.
How did that feel to you to be in this position where it was like, okay, I'm writing the stuff that's kind of at the forefront, you know, I don't know, I'm a lyrics guy, so that's what I hear, you know, almost first. So you're writing something that is kind of the, you know, the focal point for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I write, you know, observations on how I see things going down. I don't know, it's like there's... I mean, one song on the new record, it's, you know, I originally kind of wrote it as just for fun, and I think it turned out to be one of the better songs on the record. And it's, even though the lyrics aren't necessarily politically poignant. I think the narrative of the song kind of does fit in and can be applied to what's happening. So I don't know. I get inspiration wherever I can find it. I'm constantly jotting down little thoughts, or I'll hear somebody make a comment, and I'll start to roll that around in my head, and something will come out of that. So, definitely, I think in punk rock in particular, I think it's important to be paying attention and have situational awareness about what is going on in the world, and not just, ignoring something. It's the typical thing of like, well, it doesn't affect me, so why should I care? It's like, well, we should all be caring right now because it does affect all of us.
This is interesting to me too, because I feel like punk rock itself is like at this kind of a rebirth in a sense. I know, like in Wichita right now, like the majority of the young bands are hardcore bands, and I think there's just something, like we've been saying, that there's just something in the air that's making people react that way.
Yeah, I think that's a really good thing. There are so many great young hardcore bands out there right now too. It really gives me a lot of hope. Punk is what, 50 plus years old now, and for the last 40 years people have been saying punk is dead, and guitar rock is dead, and stuff like that. But I think there's something about punk and hardcore punk in particular that I think brings this sense of urgency and we're not gonna take it type of thing, that I think is that really does come out of people in times like these with what's happening in the country right now.
One of the things for me about this band is obviously the appropriate energy, but with all the stuff going on, there's like hooks there. It's still this thing where it's like, it's not music that you have to necessarily be into the genre to enjoy. You can just kind of enjoy it as music.
Beyond the lyrics, it's definitely important to have a great melody and a good hook. I want people to be whistling these songs. I want people to be, singing them as they're walking around in their head on a daily basis. I think that's when we were in Husker Du, when I was in Husker Du, the three of us secretly wanted to be a power pop band.
Oh yeah. Yeah, well, and that's why that music endures, because there's something that people can latch on to with those songs. So what is the actual like writing like? Are all three of you kind of in the same place when are you getting in a room and kind of going over ideas, or is this something where people kind of send demos or?
Well, for this record, Ryan Smith lives in the Twin Cities, not far from where I'm at. So for this record, I sent Ryan lyrics, and then he would come up with an idea and just kind of do a rough demo and send it back out to myself and Derek. Derek O'Brien lives in LA. And so then Derek would start thinking about, drum arrangements, and then we started working on the material last summer, right before we did a short little tour in August, and we got together and hammered out the first three songs for the record. It's one of those things from the initial demo that Ryan kind of comes up with, and then it's basically like taking it to the forge and pounding on it and getting it into the shape that we want and the arrangement that we want. And it's once we're able to get in a room together, then that really breathes life into the composition. So this was a really fun record to make, and actually, I think working with Ryan Smith in particular, as my co-songwriter, I think he's actually made me become a better songwriter. So that's good too.
I really can't think of anything on the record where I can't imagine being in a club sweating with a bunch of people. It's all very live appropriate.
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait to get out and play play these new songs live. You know, we're a high energy act. You know, I Ryan likes to jump around on stage. I still jump around on stage. I'll be 67 next month, but you know, it's once I start playing, I just want to jump around and do some high kicks, and you know, the next morning I think like, what the hell did I do? But you know, once the music starts, I you know, I just makes me want to move, and I hope it makes other people want to move too.
I wondered if we could just talk a little bit about your bass playing, because it strikes me that you have kind of an English sensibility to your playing, you know? So was that stuff that you were initially inspired by, was like the English rock bands of the 70s and so forth?
Gang of Four, Wire, those were two bands that definitely like highly influenced my playing style. You know, I also, you know, grew up listening to a lot of jazz and avant-garde jazz as well. So I guess I've never really broke it down like that, but that's an interesting take for sure.
Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think pretty much most of what you've done has always been kind of the trio format. So you've got these frequencies that you're kind of responsible for filling up.
I love the power trio format. And for Bob Mould and myself, Husker Du was our first band. And so I learned how to play in a band playing you know, with Bob. And you know, when we started writing all those early Husker songs, it's like, okay, well, we're a three piece, but we're gonna fill out the sound, so we sound like we're a bigger band than just three instruments. So you know, in a way, it's like playing rhythm bass instead of just a bass player that's just holding down the root and pushing the root. You know, playing melodic lines against what Bob is doing to really fill it out.
Ultra Bomb's going to go out and actually do, looks like quite a few dates this year. So live performance is something that you still enjoy at this point.
Yeah, I absolutely love performing live. I actually like touring. I don't mind being out on the road, but it's, you know, just getting in front of people and, you know, and bringing joy to people and watching people enjoy it. It's and plus live, you know, live shows are an experience. It's you know, no two shows are ever exactly the same. Ichigo Ichie, right? One moment, one time. This moment will never happen again. So, it's every show brings me something new, and hopefully the audience as well.
There's something interesting about live music too, because like I had this experience recently. I was in Nashville seeing a show, and I had these people from South Carolina on one side of me and this couple from Australia on the other side of me. And the band I was watching went into their big song, and it was just such an emotional, like, you know, even if that's not like my favorite song, just that power of that room and people from everywhere united for that.
Exactly, right. That's something you don't get from just, you know, hearing it on your car stereo or in your headphones. You know, being there with everybody else in that moment, it's those are special moments for sure.
Also on this record, of course, you cover the Suicide Commandos. That must be also a little nod to history, because I think like in the Twin Cities scene, Chris Osgood's one of those people who, you know, I think of like him and Curtis A. Historically, they're sort of like the granddaddies of a lot of that scene.
Oh yeah, you know, it's the Commandos were, you know, they were a big influence on us as little tiny punk rockers just starting out. And Bob actually took some guitar lessons from Chris Osgood. I've known Chris and Dave and Steve, you know, for decades. And you know, the first two Ultra Bomb records, you know, each one included a cover. You know, the first one, when Finney and Jamie were still in the band, we decided on Sonic Reducer just because it was such a great, iconic, you know, punk anthem. And the second album, Dying to Smile, we decided to pick something that was quintessentially, you know, British. So we went with the Bruts in a Rut. And when Derek and Ryan and I started working on this record, you know, I'm like, you know, I think, you know, for the, you know, let's throw a cover on this record, but, you know, we're recording here in Minneapolis. I really think we should do a Commando song. And Mosquito Crucifixion has been one of my all time favorite songs. And that song is 50 years old. You know, and if you listen to it, it's like, holy crap, that was written 50 years ago. Crazy.
When you were coming up as a musician in that time when there were, you know, the Commandos had happened, but it sounds like a lot of those older players were really helpful to young bands and encouraging and so forth. How important do you think that is for a young musician to just have that acknowledgement of, like, you know, more experienced players, that they come and check you out and things like that? Or what did it do for you personally?
No, I think it's really important. I think it's also, you know, speaks to the punk community as being, you know, supportive and helpful. You know, we don't want to see anybody fail. We want to see people thrive and do it. And if you do it better than we do it, that's great. You know, I mean, I still go check out young bands, and, you know, I don't walk in and go like, hey, I'm Greg Norton, you know who I am. You know, it's like but just go in there and to support, and actually I get it, a lot of inspiration from it. You know, the Commandos definitely were very supportive of the scene back in the day. You know, the Suburbs were as well. You know, the Replacements and Husker Du started out at the same time. You know, Loud Fast Rules came along, and, you know, and we you know, helped those guys and encouraged them. They, you know, changed their name to Soul Asylum and had huge success. So, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, I love my punk rock community, and I want to see everybody thrive in it.
Do you ever think about, you know, what would have been different if you and Grant, for instance, hadn't started playing music together, and then met Bob? Do you have any idea of, like, where things would have gone for you?
You know, that's a really good question. You know, I mean, if Husker Du hadn't started, I don't really know if I would have become a punk rock bass player, or if I just would have been, you know, just somebody that was part of the scene. So I guess I've never really thought about that, but that's a really good point. You know, along the way through Husker's career, I mean, we made some choices in what we were playing or what we were writing that like our initial embrace of hardcore, I didn't necessarily, like, you know, understand it or think it was the best thing that we could have done at the time. The earlier Husker stuff was kind of more of a Manchester, England type vibe. But I think hardcore was an experiment that we needed to do. And I think it was one of those things where Bob was like, yeah, I can write hardcore. And, you know, he wrote some of the best hardcore songs of American punk rock. And, but then we, you know, that was like a phase, and then we moved beyond it, you know? So, I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to give that one more thought.
Okay.
I'm sitting here rambling.
Well, it's just funny to me, because it's like, I have things in my own life where it's like, you know, if I didn't encounter this person or that person, some other things would have never, they would have just never opened to me. You know, it's just that chance.
Yep. That's an excellent point. You know, I had a 20 plus year career in restaurants and working as a chef, and that goes back to just happened to meet someone who became a really good friend who was, one of the top chefs in the Twin Cities, and he talked me into the back of the kitchen, back of the house, and taught me how to cook, again, chance meeting, and there you go.
With the culinary world, and then, coming out of music, where you'd done performance, I would think there's kind of almost like a performance element in the culinary world, you know?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean that a lot of similarities between music and restaurants. I always would say that when you open up a kitchen and you're getting your mise en place in place, that's your sound check. You're doing all your prep, and then once the dinner hour starts, that's your set. Your set time, your menu is your set list. Except you don't know how many times you're going to have to repeat the same song over and over again. And then you do get instant feedback from your audience. If they love it, they tell you. If they don't love it, they tell you. And also, from working in restaurants, I always encourage people, like, if they do have negative comments, please tell me. I don't want to hear people just tell me all the time, like, oh, that was great, because then eventually, I think if you're surrounded by that, you start to believe that everything that you do is great. You need that negative criticism in order to become better. And that's the one thing I think everybody should do, is just try to be a little bit better every day. I'm wearing my hat for the Super Nice Club, which is just try to be a little bit better each day. And that's it. I think that's all we can do.
You've been listening to a conversation with Ultrabones' Greg Norton. The trio's new LP, The Bridges That We Burn, is out May 1st. You can learn more about it by visiting the band's Facebook page, facebook.com/ultrabombmusic.com. You can learn more about this show and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org, and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you next time. And as always, we'd like to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torn Anderson.